Good evening. Welcome to House Finance. Sorry about the delay, but things worked strangely in the capital of Juneau. The time is 7:30. With us tonight we have Representative Holm, Representative Kelly, Representative Foster, Representative Wyrock, Representative Hawker, Representative Jewell, Representative Kurtula, Vice Chair Stoltz, Co-Chair Meyer, and myself, Co-Chair Chenault. Also with us we have Representative Gatto, Representative Berkowitz, Representative Samuels, Representative Guttenberg, the powerful Rules Chairman, Representative Roteberg, Representative Seaton, Representative Guerra. Am I missing anybody?
Mr. Newman.
Oh, Representative Newman. Welcome to House Finance. With that, tonight we'll be taking up amendments to CS for House Bill number 3001, version 24-GH. 2096-I, bullet dated 8/1/06. It is my intent to tonight, at a minimum, take up two amendments that are in front of us. It is also my intention to not move this bill out of committee till tomorrow, if we get there, and to allow members that haven't had the time to look at it or want to look at some different amendments to bring them before us. So with that, I would like to take up amendment number one, and I'd like to move amendment number one. There is an objection, so I'll speak to it, but I'll ask Robin to come up and really do the technical. This amendment, when the first draft of this bill was put before us, it was a work draft, but Ledge Legal had not actually went through it and made their fine tuning on it. So what amendment one does is basically bring the language that was intended to be in there, back in there. So I'll let Robin explain it. She can walk down through it. It looks like a lot, but I think a lot of it's just repetition as far as names and numbers. So, Robin, if you would.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Robin Wilson. I'm the Tax Director for the Department of Revenue. And I will walk through the amendments as the Chair indicated. Most of these items are either grammatical or sentence structure. Those sorts of cleanup items. And those amendments start on page 4 of the bill, starting on line 18, and that is the section of the bill that starts with the progressivity. Currently, the language says during each calendar year on line 18 and 19, and it will say for each calendar year. Then moving on along in that sentence, on line 20, it deletes, on line 19, after year, it inserts that includes one or more months and deletes that language on line 20. So that is just simply a sentence reordering. So the sentence as amended will be, in addition to the tax levied under E of this section, for each calendar year that includes one or more months, for which the price index determined under H of this section is greater than zero, there is levied on the producer of oil or gas a tax for all oil and gas produced that calendar year from each lease or property in the state. So that is the change there. Flipping over to page 6, line 6, And starting where it says per NC, it says the average prevailing value of gas, and what it currently says is produced in the Cook Inlet area for the 12-month period. And the amendment removes the word produced and inserts the word delivered to make it consistent with the regulations that are currently in place. And that same, a very similar amendment then is on line 25. It says per NC, the average prevailing value for oil produced and delivered is what will be inserted there in the Cook Inlet area. Again, that is consistent with the regulation. Moving on then to page 8. And this is an amendment to section 020A. I'm looking on lines 28 and 29. What it currently says is the total of the monthly production values calculated under AS 4355-160A2. And the amendment deletes the word under and inserts in the manner provided in. Because 160A2 is not exactly on point with this, but it provides the manner in which that will be calculated. On page 9, what you see on lines 6 and 7 is a definition of IP, which is not, it is not necessary in that formula. So the amendment deletes lines 6 and 7 completely, and also deletes the items IP equals on line 4. And so then the sentence will read, I'm starting on line 2, is the amount calculated according to the following formula but not less than 0, and then it will start with 12 times per NMP, so the IP is not necessary to that. Flipping over then to page 12, line 28. Well, actually, I would refer to line 27 and 28. The end of line 27 says before, and then it says within 30 days. And so the amendment deletes before. And so the way that sentence will read is to provide the Department of Natural Resources within 30 days. So that was basically a duplicative word that was deleted. On page 13, line 21, the very first word in that line says later, and it has to do with 60 days after the later of, but if you'll see in that paragraph, we have three items, and so grammatically that later needs to be changed to latest. Going on into page 14, line 31, the very last line, it says the issuance of a cash refund certificate, and there is no such thing particularly as a cash refund certificate. And so the word certificate is deleted. It does not change the result of credits that are refundable or credit certificates, but it corrects this language right there. Page 16, line 2. And to clarify, what the sentence currently says is for any year that ends after the later of 2013 and so on. And to make that phrase more clear, it deletes the words that ends, and it will simply say for any calendar year after the later of 2013. On the very next page, that is page 17, line 13, this section originally had two credits in it, back a couple of iterations of the bill. The new area development credit is the only credit remaining in this section, so the S at the end of credits has been deleted. And then a clarification on lines 15 and 16. what it currently says is oil and gas produced from leases or properties outside the Cook Inlet sedimentary basin and south of 68 degrees north latitude. And it was a suggestion of Ledge Legal that that be the word south be deleted and the words no part of which is north of. And so the way the sentence will read is for a calendar year in which the producer's tax liability under AS 4355011E on oil and gas production from leases or properties outside the Cook Inlet sedimentary basin and no part of which is north of 68 degrees north latitude exceeds and so on. So that will be the change there. On page 18, lines 11 through 13, that language clarifies that the word producer shall include explore, but that is no longer applicable to that section, and so it has been deleted. Where it is applicable, it is already in the bill, so that is extra language that has been removed by the amendment. Going over then to page 21, if you'll recall that the current bill before you imposes a tax that for which the tax return will be filed yearly, but there'll be monthly installment payments or estimated tax payments, if you will. The draft, when this particular version was drafted, those changes to make it annual were left out. And so the amendment corrects the language in subsection I, which starts on line 19, and so it deletes where it says month and inserts calendar year as appropriate. And there's, I think, three instances in that paragraph. Going on then to page 24, and I am in the paragraph that starts line 19 through 26. And if you'll recall, this bill, as did the conference committee, formed before it, establishes sort of four areas of the state, one being North Slope, second being the South, and then Cook Inlet oil and Cook Inlet gas. So there have been four. There was some concern raised in the language in paragraph 1, subparagraph A. The way the language is right now, it suggested that the production tax value had to be calculated lease by lease rather than on a slope-wide basis. And so the changes, this has been changed to clarify that. So at the end of line 20, where it says a lease or property, that will be deleted, and the words leases or properties in the state, and then includes will become include. And on line 23, instead of saying that lease or property, it will say those leases or properties, as it will on line 25. And the other change there is on line 21. In the middle there, it says at or north of, and the at or is being deleted. So I will just read that paragraph, and then that sort of thing is repeated a couple of times. That's why the amendment looks so long. It will be oil and gas produced during a calendar year from leases or properties in the state that include land north of 68 degrees north latitude is the gross value at the point of production of the oil and lease taxable under 4305011E and produced by the producer from those leases or properties less the producer's lease expenditures under 4355165 for the calendar year applicable to the oil and gas produced by the producer from those leases or properties adjusted under, as adjusted under 4355-170. So that then, that same problem is in subparagraph B, so you'll see the same changes there. C and D are not changed because C and D refer to the Cook Inlet oil and gas. And because that's the tax ceiling is an ELF-based system, that is calculated lease by lease. The very same changes are mirrored in on page 25, paragraph 2, A and B, subparagraph, again, just duplicative of those changes. So that's really much of the amendment there in front of you. Going on then to page 26, line 26. actually reading, starting page 25, it says, are less than zero as adjusted lease expenditures for a calendar year under 4355-165 and 4355-170 are less than zero as the result of a producer's receiving a payment or credit under 4355-170 or otherwise. And the drafter pointed out that the words or otherwise are not necessary, that there isn't really any other situation that we can envision that that would apply to. So the words or otherwise have been deleted. On page 31, there's been a little bit of punctuation editing basically to make that more clear. I'm looking at line 3, and there's a comment sort of after production and one after equivalent. So barrels of equivalent will be offset by commas. Then on line 4, in the middle there's an extra or. So if you read the series, that middle or does not need to be there. It's been deleted. Those same two changes occur then on line 6, where barrels of oil equivalent is offset by commas, and line 7, where or is deleted. And then finally, on page 37, line 27 is the definition of heating value, and the way it reads is means the gross number of BTUs evolved by complete combustion of an amount of gas. And the drafter suggested a change to the word evolved, and so evolved has been deleted and released has been inserted for general clarity. I believe that takes care of the amendments on the technical amendment.
Are there any questions? Is the objection still maintained?
Nope.
We have an Eddie's.
We'll come back to order. Representative Stoltz.
I'll maintain my objection. No, it's,
Maintain, or are you going to remove your objection?
Excuse me.
I'll object, okay. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Meyer.
Yeah, I'll object for the purposes of doing disclosure on a potential conflict of interest in a matter before us.
Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I know you've heard this several times before, and I know we don't need to make this disclosure at the committee level, but I feel that this matter is of utmost importance to the state, and so I would like to declare that when I'm able, I do work for and am employed by ConocoPhillips, and they will be directly impacted by our action on this bill tonight, and because of that, I'd like to be excused from voting.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stoltz.
I'm going to object. I don't think our rules really provide for passing on a vote when they're here on the floor. I mean, certainly, he stated his conflict, perceived conflict, and it appears other places in the public record. I think the public purpose has been served by you declaring it, and I want you to be accountable for the vote that the voters of District 30 have entrusted you.
There's objection, Representative Meyer. You'll be required to vote. Representative Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the same vein and concurring with the editorial comments of Representative Meyer, I would like to declare the existence of a potential conflict of interest with this legislation, which will have significant impacts on Alaska's oil and gas industry, as a member of my immediate family is employed by one of the major producers, sir, and I would request to be excused from the proceedings.
Chairman, I'll object.
Representative Stoltz.
I'll object, and I'll reaffirm my same statement that I don't want to preclude the voters of District 31 from represent 32.
Thank you, sir.
Well, I don't want 31 either. They're District 32. So I'll maintain my objection.
Representative Hawker, there's been objection, so you'll be required to vote. And I would be amiss if I also didn't take this opportunity to declare conflict. It's been stated before. While it may not be required in the committee, I think that we all believe that we're doing the right thing, even at this level, to make sure that the public does know that we as citizen legislators also have other jobs. And while some may think that those influence us heavily, I think that I have the utmost admiration for the members of this body for performing the job that they do. So I will also ask to be excused from a vote.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, I'll object and reiterate the same arguments without saying them.
How do I do that there? Thank you, Representative Stoltz.
I'll hold my objection. No, it's a...
Well, you know, I mean, we laugh about it, and I'll make one other comment before we move on. We laugh about it to some extent, and hopefully the public doesn't think that we take our jobs lightly, because I don't believe there's anybody in this room or in this building that don't take their job very seriously. So... in order to hopefully not get chastised at some future point in time, I just want the public to know that each person at this table and each person at this room, I think, take their jobs very seriously and take representing the people of Alaska as the utmost importance. So with that, Representative Stoltz, do you still maintain your objection to Amendment Number 1?
I'll remove my objection.
I'll remove mine also, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Is there objections to Amendment Number 1? Hearing none, Amendment Number 1 is adopted. Before we go farther, Representative Coring and Representative Crawford have been with us for quite a while. I think I noted Representative Guttenberg earlier, but I'll
announcing twice. Also online, we do have Rob Mintz for any, I would say, legal questions. With that, we'll move on to amendment number two, and I will move amendment number two.
I'll object.
Thank you, Representative Stoltz. Mr. Dickinson, would you like to walk us through conceptual amendment number two?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like very much to walk you through at least the first portions of this. For the record, my name is Dan Dickinson. I'm a former director of the Tax Division of the Department of Revenue, and I'm currently working for the department on this and Tranny Act matters. What I have here is I passed out three documents I think have been circulated. In short time, tried to summarize in numerical form some of the things that you're going to see in front of you here. The basic idea in this amendment, and basically what I'm talking about now are the first 13 lines, is a very simple idea. You can express it in 13 lines. And the basic idea is, instead of putting a tax rate set in stone in the legislation that all taxpayers pay, the tax rate will vary someplace between 20% and 25%, depending on how much reinvestment that producer is making in the state of Alaska. So the fundamental idea is, if you are making a commitment, reinvestment, putting in dollars back into the state, you can essentially buy down or invest down, if you will, your tax rate to 20%. For a producer that is not making that kind of commitment, I think the phrase you hear a lot is in the harvest mode, their tax rate could go up to 25%. This just affects the base tax rate that in prior legislation was set at in the governor's bill, 20%, 22.5%. It's been set at various things. This does not affect the progressivity measures. It does not affect the alternative measures in Cook Inlet. It doesn't affect any of those other pieces. It basically just goes into where there was a set rate, there is now a variable rate. So I think what I try to do is summarize. There's a formula here on line 12, but what I think is easier maybe if folks just look at that first table. And basically, the first column says, looking at the investment that's being made on a dollar per barrel measurement. And again, the idea behind looking at it as a dollar per barrel is you have producers that have very different sizes. We tend to think of three large producers, but even among those producers, there's a real difference between the largest and the smallest. And then again, there are many, many other producers that have smaller stakes in some of the other fields. So one way you're kind of look at all producers essentially on a common basis to reduce it to a dollar per barrel investment. First column shows what is that dollar per barrel investment. The second column shows the amount, the percentage that you subtract from 25%, but that's kind of an intermediate step. The right-hand column says, here's the tax rate that would result. So you simply look at the top line. If there is no investment being made, a producer will have a 25% tax rate. If you look at the bottom line, and a producer is investing $7 a barrel, and if you just think about the world we live in now, where roughly 300 million barrels were produced last year, 300 times 7, so that would work out to about $2 billion. So if across Slope Y we had $2 billion worth of investment, you'd have everyone making that kind of investment, participating in that, at a 20% tax rate. And that's the fundamental idea, as I understand it, behind this notion. You're either going to make the investments necessary to produce, or you're going to pay higher tax. Those are the pieces. If you look roughly in the middle there, you will see the difference between 0 and 7 on the scale. The middle of that's about $3.50. Actually, the middle of that is exactly $3.50. And that brings you out to, again, the tax rate right in the middle of 22.5. What you will see, though, is the first two lines, the first three lines actually, is any investment below a dollar a barrel doesn't buy down the tax rate. In other words, simply to be operating in the North Slope, there are simply kinds of investments that are characterized as capital that are necessary to continue to get the oil out of the ground. Somewhat arbitrarily, we put that, sometimes you hear that called the LTO or license to operate. It's just this absolute minimum dollars you need to spend to keep things ticking. There are various estimates that I don't want to pretend that $1 is right on, but it does say there's a certain minimum level that doesn't buy down your tax rate. You then start buying it down once you are over $1 a barrel, and again, kind of with the symmetry, once you hit $6 a barrel, the third line from the bottom, that's when you hit the 20%, and as you go above $6, you don't buy down any further. So that is the core idea behind this, the first 12 lines. To kind of, if you turn to the second page of this handout, what you'll see is a series of boxes, and what I really like to do is focus in on the very bottom box. This is a capital spending on the North Slope over the last 5 years. As you'll see, 2006, obviously, it's still an estimate. We're only halfway through the year, or a little bit over halfway. The volumetric material here was taken from the Department of Revenue's figures. The actual investment figures were taken from a handout that I think many of you saw in a kind of a filled presentation back in March. But here you can see we've charted out the major companies. I think what I'd like to focus on is the very bottom box. And what you will see is a rates that at their highest were in our $4 range. 2006, it might be as high as $4.60. Look at 2003, where you had investment of $150 million, less than $1 billion, $1 per barrel, that's about 2.36 cents. Those average out to $3 over the 5 years. What we see slope-wide is an average of about $3.42, which we rounded to sort of hit that median point of $3.50. But this gives you an idea of what kind of spending you see across the slope.
I think what you'll see as you look back and look at the individual investments,
you have some things, for example, in BP back in 2001 was spending very heavily on the North Star production. ConocoPhillips, you see a lot of the investments that they've been making at further west, at the Alpine, and the satellites being developed beyond that. So you can get a sense of what's going on. But the one thing I would caution you with on the others, that's kind of an amalgamation, and there may be some ratios in there that look funny because those really are differences. But that gives you a sense of a snapshot and how that would apply when it's plugged into the tax rates on the first slide. The third slide here, and I apologize, I thought the shading would show, and I guess it doesn't. I should have gotten color copies, so I apologize for not doing that. But basically what this does is just give you a sense of ranges. This is really kind of a mechanical set of operations. Down the left-hand side, you see production. The first column is the million barrels a day that we're used to hearing, where we are right now. We're talking about in the 825 range. The next column simply translates that into 365, so how many million barrels in a year. And then along the top, you simply see what if you had investment that was as low as $400 million, $500 million, all the way up to $2 billion. What you can see is the darker set, and that kind of defines the line in there that would define this kind of midpoint of about $3.50. So as volumes decline, to maintain that, you would also have a declining investment.
Presumably, what we're trying to get is a situation where as
volumes are declining, we're having investment, which in future years means that volumes will not be declining. And that's the idea, is that as you make those investments, you're bringing down the tax rate. What you can't see, but I think if you look at it very quickly, you'll see a lot on the right-hand side that people have talked about going up to, doubling investment or something. You'll see those figures are generally tend to be a lot above the $6 rate. So, in fact, if you have activity out there and we get up in those very high rates, we will all have people driving their tax rates down to zero. Once you hit that $6, you drive down to a 20% tax rate, and that's where that stays. So that, Mr. Chairman, quick is kind of what's happening under number one in this proposal. If I can go on and do number probably two and three as well. And number two really just sets forward how you're going to calculate this investment, the investment factor, in other words, how you turn investments across the state for gas, for oil, into a single level. Item number three on this conceptual amendment really derives from some material. If you were committee members who were here yesterday, a presentation Tom Williams from EP sent out when the discussion was being made, a compare and a contrast, if you will, between the production based and a investment based. One of the criticisms that was raised, and an accurate one, is under this method you can get a gold plating situation. And what I mean by that is let's say we're in the current price environment, which is like $72, $73 a barrel. If you make an investment that drives down a 1% change in your tax rate, the gross taxable value is about $20 billion. So a 1% change in that is huge. So what's going to happen is by making a $100 investment, when you take all the pieces and the ways that work for the tax system, your taxes, your state taxes, would be lower by about $120 or $130. Furthermore, you would also have lower federal taxes. So if somebody, a person looking at that situation would say, "Gosh, I'm going to buy new fire engines for all the fire departments on the North Slope. I won't get any more production, but I'll make an investment. I'll do various things which won't lead to more production." Gold plating is the classic term because it just makes sense to throw money in there to get a tax reward for it. So what we've done here is say, okay, we're going to set up a formula that makes sure that if you're in a situation where that would occur, we're going to come in and there's going to be a cutoff, there's going to be a limit. So and if you look in the equation on line 21, you'll see over on the right-hand side is probably one of the critical numbers. What this says is the producer has to be paying at least 25 cents on the dollar. It still can't be a situation where they can throw money away. So if they're going to go make a $100 million investment, at the very highest you're going to find is that the state and federal governments are supporting 70, are going to allow tax reductions of $75 million as a consequence of that, but the producer is still going to be out of pocket $25 million. They still have to make rational investments which will lead to future production. Now, if you sit and you do the IRR, you look at the investment, those investments are being made a whole lot more favorable. Because clearly, if you would have invested $100 million to get a cash flow, you're now a future flow of barrels, which leads to a future flow of dollars, you're now only making a $25 million investment. So the notion is to make those investments much more attractive, but not to make them so attractive that you get silly investments, or investments that wouldn't occur otherwise. So, basically, there are about nine different ways that capital investments percolate through the tax, both the federal and the state tax system. What we've done here is identify four of them and build those in. And if I can just run through this very quickly. The first one basically says you look at the tax rate, R versus QC, you look at the qualified capital expenditure, it's allowed a deduction, so whatever your tax rate is, you get a deduction for that amount. There's still a 20% credit in here, so the next term says whatever your capital qualified expenditure is, when you take a credit, you're going to get back 20 cents on the dollar. The next one deals with the issue that I talked about earlier, which is you're going to be buying your tax rate down. You're not going to be at 25%, you're going to be able to buy your tax rate down. That tax rate gets applied against every dollar of PPT value, POP value, and so that can be a very large number. So all those first three terms are all going to be ways that by making capital investments, you're paying less taxes. Now, the next thing that's kind of within the squirrely brackets there, that says, gosh, whenever that happens, whenever you pay a dollar less in state taxes, your federal taxes go up. And so if you assume that they're paying a 35% marginal tax rate, in fact, when they have that tax savings, they're only picking up 65 cents on that. So that next piece of the formula simply acknowledges that federal tax result of that. The final piece says QC times IR, and what that says is, IR is the federal tax rate. It says, gosh, if I make an investment of $100 million, I get to reclaim that in my federal taxes. Now, as you well know, that can take 10 or 15 or 20 years to reclaim. In other words, you get depreciation as a deduction. Among the things that we haven't accounted for here is the time value of money. So this overstates that. On the other hand, there's a number of other things that we haven't accounted for that run the other direction. For example, we haven't taken into effect the fact that you're paying state income taxes, which also have that same depreciation deduction, incidentally, in a different schedule than the federal taxes. There are currently federal tax credits, like an ER tax credit. So, for example, certain investments the state, the federal government will allow an immediate deduction of 15 cents on the dollar. Those aren't in there. What we've done is just come up with an approximation which says, okay, we'll just take whatever the federal tax rate is. That may change over time. This will allow us to reflect that change over time, and that will be another term. The final number is on the left-hand side, the right-hand side says when all that calculation is done, the limit is 75%. The most that all the tax benefits can equal is 75% of the investment. The companies need to stay in the game for the other 25%. So that's the background behind that formula. Basically, what that's going to do is mean in certain situations, a taxpayer will not be able to buy all the way down to 20% because there'll be a limit that says you cannot gain more from making an investment. What you can gain is a certain amount of support, but you simply can't get back 110 or 120 cents on the dollar for making a dollar investment. And that, Mr. Chairman, is as far as I went in this amendment in under J. So, and that runs through line 10 on page 2.
Thank you, Dan. I believe Representative Jewell had a question.
Yeah. Can I get you back to this? On the second page, if I interpreted what you said correctly, the second page is a reflection for investments made over the last 5 years. And I'm assuming that those investments have been for oil.
Yes.
Okay. And then we go to the table on page 3. And when you refer back to page 2 to say where the middle is, my question is for looking forward. The investments are going to be for oil as well as gas, and so those investments are going to max up way out here. So my question is, and I'm not agreeing with it or disagreeing, I just want to understand this, but basically once those investments for gas start kicking in, the prevalent rate probably is going to be around 20%.
Representative Jewell, through the chair, that's correct. As you increase the volumes, but the volumes would also go into the computation, when you're making the investments, for example, when Point Thompson is being developed, there'll be a lot of money being put in, and that will drive the rate further to the right. When you then have production, this is based on a barrel of oil equivalent, so when you have production, that would move back through the system. And so you get more production. Again, that's going to lower any future dollar per barrel.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that I was interpreting what I thought you said, looking down the line, because eventually at some point we want to get to gas, I would assume. But you know, that's where a lot of the investment dollars are going to be, and they're going to be huge dollars. I mean, we heard British Petroleum yesterday say that you know, in the next 4 years, if we were to move forward, they'd be looking at $15 billion in investment. And so I'm just trying to conceptualize all of that.
Representative Jewell, through the chair, it's two points I want to make. One of them is a lot of the investments that would just be for gas wouldn't qualify. One thing that we need to back up to say, these are only upstream investments. Okay. These are only the kinds of things that lead to more production. Again, we spent a lot of time going through the definitions over the past several months, but the pipelines...
Could you reiterate for me?
Sure, certainly. The point is, when we're upstream at the point of production, when we're in the field, the facilities that you need to get the oil out of the ground, you get that separation, so you've got a gas stream and oil stream, those are the kind of things that qualify. the actual investments that the you know a gas line or the gas treatment plant, those kind of things, those would not qualify. So the point I'm trying to make is when you talk about investments for gas, that might be part of the business plan, but particularly like if you look at Point Thompson, for example, we look at investments that half if you look at it on an energy equivalent basis, probably half of what's going to come out of there is going to go in taps, half of what comes out of there is going to go into the gas line.
Thank you.
Representative Couture.
Thanks. You may have just answered my question. So all of this is only on upstream expenditures, and that's what's going to set your rate, are the upstream expenditures?
Representative Couture, through the chair, that's correct.
So we really don't have to worry. I was worrying about had you factored in decline, you know, and what it was just going to cost the company to keep up with decline. But that's not going to have anything to do with this because we're just looking at the upstream.
Representative Petrullo, through the chair, a lot of the investment that needs to be made is upstream investment. In other words, you have to keep punching new wells in, cleaning, building new facilities. So I think a lot of the work that has to be done with decline is upstream. Now, clearly, when you have a step change, like a new export line for gas, for example, no, that wouldn't be in there. That's, I think, as you heard the last couple of days, that's a big part of arresting decline. But mechanically, the work you need to do on the slope keep the oil and the gas, keep the hydrocarbons coming out. Yes, that would all be part of what's allowed in this calculation.
Have you actually calculated or had any way to figure out what it would cost a company just to keep up with the decline or not?
Representative Petrullo, through the chair, yes and no. There's two things going on, and I think Mr. Williams illustrated this yesterday. If you look at the slope as a whole, I think what you see is large mature fields decline and new fields come on. And so there are certainly been estimates for some of the new fields. I keep bringing up Point Thompson because that's really the largest one left. But if you look at what Anadarko and Cotton Phillips are spending now to develop Fjord and Nanook, just to the west of Alpine, you know, they're bringing on new fields that will stem decline. The second thing that you see occurring is simply the work that goes on to stem the, you know, that decline within that field, putting in new wells, coming up with new technologies. And it's not quite, there's a gray area between them because you have the satellite exploitation, things like that. So, short answer is we haven't calculated a number that says an investment of $2 billion will lead to a level, a lack of decline. But we certainly looked at what it would take, the near-term investments that it would take to come up a line with a bigger flatter than what you see into that was.
Representative Couture.
And I just imagine the difficulty with being able to determine what the companies would be spending anyway without something like this is I mean, can something like that theoretically be determined?
Representative Couture, you know, no. From my point of view, you can't. You make investment decisions based on return. You compare various options. And so when you say, what would they spend without it? Say, we don't know what the world will look like, we don't know what those other things will be. It's hard to say. What you're trying to do is look at other systems to bring yourself more in line with places where money is being spent.
And finally, so will you do this on a yearly basis? So every year the tax rate could change, or how often will it be determined?
Representative Chair, that's correct. Yeah, just to make it clear, each taxpayer could have a different rate as a consequence of that. And Rob may spend some time. You'll basically do an estimate, and then when the year is known and you can do the thing, you'll do it through our tax rate.
Thank you.
For the record, also, Commissioner Corbis has been with us, and he just hides behind people, so it's hard for me to always see him. But welcome, Commissioner. Representative Stoltz.
Oh, very, very briefly, Mr. Chairman. I just want to appreciate the short notice. I know you, Ms. Wilson and Mr. Dickinson, you work for the executive branch, and you have a different approach, favor the original version of 3001. And on very short notice, you've directed the legislature's effort to revise this, and and it's and I, as we go on, it's there's not may not always be as much zeal, and that's for public explanation. This is the legislative branches, at least at this committee phase, our stab at this, and that I want to thank them on very short notice for trying to serve two masters very professionally on this and on this difficult task.
Thank you, Rick, for all that. And just, you know, I was in contact and have been talking with Barry Collier, who was working for Econ 1, who was working for the legislative branch, and so we've been talking about this, and he may have further thoughts on it as well.
Also, for the record, Representative Olson and Representative Wilson have joined us. Any other questions for Dan at this time? Seeing none, thank you, Dan. Robin?
Do I need to finish going through the amendment there? Okay. I'm on page 2 of the amendment, starting on line 12 of the amendment. And these next three items deal with the progressivity. You recall in the bill before you has several blanks. And so that we go to page 4, line 26. And this is subsection G. And so line 26, the blank, has been deleted and replaced with 0.25. And so that denotes the slope of the progressivity curve. So it will say, shall be calculated for each month as follows, 0.25% of the monthly production tax value, and so on. So that on the amendment, page 2, line 14, that's the delete or insert 0.25. The next item on page 2 is the maximum that the progressivity can go to, the maximum rate, and that would be inserted in the blank on page 4 of the bill, line 29. So the intention is to that the progressivity caps will not exceed 25%. And then moving on to page 5, at the very top of the page of the bill, the blank there is the trigger that where the progressivity kicks in. And so I'm looking at the amendment, page 2, line 22, insert 40. So 40 would be the trigger point, and that would be $40 net production tax value. So those three items have to do with the progressivity. The next part of the amendment, and the next part of the amendment deals with the base allowance credit. And what I'd like to, for the moment, skip over to page 4 of the amendment, starting on line 10. This is the guns that I'll come back and point out, this is one of the amendments, but this, starting on line 10, page 4 of the amendment, then is the base allowance credit that was $12 million and based on production, so it is for the small producers. And this is the same language that you saw in the conference committee. So if you back up on the amendment, on page 2, then the sort of conforming amendments to that addition start on line 24 of page 2 of the amendment. So those three items are all conforming amendments. Going over to page 3 of the amendment, line 4, where it says delete 2005, this is page 8 of the bill, and if you'll take a look at that, the language that is in the bill right now deals with, in the absence of sufficient sampling and testing of gas produced during 2005 or 6, and the year 2005 is relevant only in the production tax scenario, and so it's just simply been deleted. And so what this means is, you know, there's certain instances where we would have to know the BTU equivalents for in 2006, since it's retroactive to April 1st, we might not, we would have to know it for May and June and so on. And so this language then, you know, allows the department to establish a reasonable method of determining that. The amendment, again, just deletes 2005 or. Okay, and then the next item on line 7 is a conforming amendment. On line 12, still on page 3 of the amendment, these are the estimated tax payment rules that have been adjusted now that we're in an investment scheme rather than a production scheme. And so what this says is that for February through December, then the tax rate is used, it's from the preceding tax year. So it allows the producer to know what the rate is and then move forward. So lines 12 to 21 have to do with the estimated tax payment. And then we're still on page 3 of the amendment, starting on line 23. The drafter of this amendment took out 024 and reinserted it. So there's been no changes to subsection A or B, then it goes on to page 4 of the amendment. And again, starting at line 10 of page 4 of the amendment, that's where your base allowance credit language actually starts. So that goes on, again, the same language that you saw in the previous version of the bill. On page 5 of the amendment, the next item is at line 20 of page 5 of the amendment. And that is simply a grammatical change that has nothing to do with any of the other changes. It is a technical grammatical change. And then the last line there, on page 5 of the amendment, starting on line 24, is the transition rule for the investment approach. I believe that, and the very last one there is a conforming amendment here.
Any questions? Hearing none, thank you, Rob. I think I stated it earlier, it's not our intent to move the bill out of committee tonight. I think that we're at a point right now where the bill has been introduced, or the amendments have been introduced. I think a lot of us that have been involved with it have our fingers somewhat wrapped around it. I think there's probably many in the audience and many online and other members of the body that don't have their fingers wrapped around it. So it's my intent to not move amendment number 2 tonight, but take it up in the morning. I also intend to take other amendments as they're brought forward. We intend to take testimony from industry tomorrow, and it's the intent right now of the committee to move a bill out by tomorrow afternoon. So with that, I won't adjourn the meeting, but I will recess the meeting to a call of the chair, and the time is tentatively scheduled at 10 o'clock. So are there any comments from committee members? Seeing none, thank you for coming and participating. Thank the audience for being here. And we're recessed to a call of the chair.